You're listening to CBC Radio 1, 99.1 Toronto.
Welcome back to This Morning on CBC Radio 1. My name's Sheila Rogers. A new study from the University of British Columbia says the commercial fishing industry is fast on its way to wiping out all the food fish in the sea. Within 10 years, forget about cod and halibut. We'll be fishing for bait and jellyfish. There'll be nothing else left, and not just on the East Coast, but around the world. To talk about this, I'm joined by Dr. Reg Watson. He is a senior research fellow at the Fisheries Center of the University of British Columbia. He's in Vancouver. And Dr. Les Harris, the author of the study that brought about the cod moratorium, he is in our St. John's studio. Doctors, good morning.
Good morning, Sheila.
Good morning, Sheila.
Dr. Reg Watson, I'll begin with you. How is it possible to say that in 10 years the fish that we're eating today will be all gone?
Well, there's two sources of information. One is just looking at historical landings, looking at those fish at the top of the food chain and how they've changed since the late 60s. In a pretty constant way in which you can project forward with quite a lot of certainty, it's really come down to about a third from about the late 60s to the present time. And we've also been looking at changes that actually happen within the marine ecosystems themselves, and there's been some pretty frightening changes there as well.
Dr. Les Harris, I'm just going to, can I call you Les and
yes, Reg?
Okay, thank you very much.
Please do.
Why do you think this is happening?
Well, I think it's because our common sense hasn't kept pace with our technology. I think we invented in about the middle of the 1950s and beginning of the 60s the means of exploiting fish wherever they might be found, anywhere in the ocean, with better ships, better gear, lighter gear, more powerful winches, better nets, better electronic technologies, so that fish had no escape. There was no escape down there. Mm. That wherever they were, they could be found. Wherever they were found, they could be caught. And we went ahead and exploited that capacity to overfish dreadfully, and with consequences that are pretty obvious, as Dr. Watson just said.
When you say we exploited, Les, who do you mean? And can
I
we
mean all
point?
Fishers of the world,
okay,
generally.
Yeah.
I think the worst villains in our part of the world were in the beginning the Europeans, and still are to some extent, the Russians, particularly those from the Baltic ports, the Germans in the first instance, West Germans, East Germans, the Brits, Spanish, Portuguese. At the moment, the most piratical nations, if I may use that word advisedly, are the Spanish, the Portuguese, and the Russians, in that order.
There was an article this morning in The Guardian about a European Union deal that lets, as they say, Irish fishermen off the hook. And if I can just read you the first paragraph, the biggest fishing vessel in the world, the Atlantic Dawn, with nets twice the size of the Millennium Dome, there's a good London reference for you, has been registered as a merchant vessel by the Irish government to avoid EU fishing regulations designed to preserve stocks. I mean, Reg, even when we've got the regulations in place, there are a lot of ways to fall through the nets, right?
That's a particularly worrisome example. That vessel is 144 meters long, and it's fishing off the West African coast at the present.
Yes, there are vessels that are not quite as large as that, but with the same general idea, that have been fishing off the east coast of Canada, certainly, and I suspect elsewhere in the world too, for many years, with consequences that are absolutely disastrous, because the killing is not only huge, it is also indiscriminate.
Reg, we know about the east coast fishery that's been closed in some areas now for 10 years. I can scarcely believe that. What's happening elsewhere in the world?
Well, it's much the same story, at least through the North Atlantic, and it seems to be a problem that where we export the excessive fishing capacity from one place to another and wipe out stock after stock. Basically, the North Sea has had a great deal of difficulty, and in fact, as Les was saying, with the Spanish and Portuguese fleets, they don't basically want them fishing in Europe. So what they've done is negotiate for them to fish elsewhere, and in this case, it's in the South Atlantic off, and elsewhere, and it's causing difficulties for the inshore fisheries of those nations now. And but generally, through across the whole North Atlantic, we're seeing the same kind of declines, the same kind of problems.
Tell me about Africa.
Well, we're worried about what's going on there because we seem to have options about where we get our protein. We also have a bit of political clout. We could keep out these nations now from at least our extended economic zone, the 200 nautical miles. But these countries are actually embroiled in situations where they have to get loans for the European Union, and tied with those loans is allowing access for these large fleets, including vessels like the Atlanta Dawn that was discussed before.
Not only that, there are subsidies which allow companies to afford bigger and bigger boats, right?
My word, the subsidies are a big problem, and it drives the thing along. There are different kinds of subsidies, but there are a lot of subsidies which basically they go against common sense. They don't allow anybody to give any of these stocks a rest, and they really allow you to commission new vessels like this large vessel, like this large super trawler, at times when we know we can't find enough fish to keep the local fisheries going.
We, of course, ourselves have been guilty of the same practice in a past era. I recall when the Europeans first got heavily into the exploitation of northern cod stocks, which they were able to do because they'd come up with the kinds of ships that were capable of operating in deep ice-infested waters. Our government, anxious to encourage our fisheries companies to get involved, offered subsidies to the commercial operations to get involved with northern cod. I believe it was Mr. Romeo LeBlanc who was looked upon as one of our better ministers of fisheries in respect of his care for the little people of the inshore fleet, and nevertheless offered subsidies to the big offshore companies to get involved in this rape that was going on outside the at that time, 12-mile zone.
Les, the Newfoundland cod moratorium, as I said, 10 years old. The stocks haven't bounced back, though.
No, they haven't come back at all, or at least they've come bounced back minimally in some sections of the coast. But along the east coast, which was the center for the northern cod stock, they have not come back at all. There are a great number of circumstances contributing to that, and one of them certainly is the continued operations of the European fleets outside the 200-mile economic line on what is called the nose and tail of the Grand Banks and on the Flemish Cap, which is a shallow area some 400 miles off the coast of Newfoundland.
Well, we can't extend the 200-mile line, can we?
Well, we can. I think we should. Yeah. I think the only solution to the management of those stocks is for one nation, that being the one adjacent, to have control of the entire shelf in respect of the management and conservation of marine resources. If we don't do that, they are doomed. I think we should have the courage to unilaterally declare that we are going to take responsibility for the management of those stocks and do it as Iceland did when they declared a 50-mile line.
Les, how optimistic are you?
Not at all.
Not even a little bit.
No, well, there's very little room for optimism. Yeah. If you look at the history of the exploitation of those stocks, it's not that we haven't known the consequences of what we were doing. I think we've known it for a long, long time, and we simply keep on ignoring it, you know, and keep on doing what we did before.
Just a few days ago, I was speaking with John Ralston Saul and his book On Equilibrium, and he does take the cod fishery as an example of where we could perhaps have applied or should apply our intuition. And he says it would take no trouble at all to institute a serious system of precautionary harvesting when dealing with commodities, and to realize that we're not serious, you've only to track the almost disappearance of Atlantic cod over the last decade, as country after country has denied, prevaricated, protested, worried about employment until their inaction meant there would be no jobs at all. And of course, that's where it's going to go too, isn't it? This is...
Well, there's a fundamental question that we haven't addressed, of course, and that is whether we can actually continue in any domain to harvest wild creatures for our use and to have the species survive. If you think of land animals, we haven't done it. We have continued the killing, but we have domesticated the creatures so that we can manage the whole production from beginning to end. With wild stocks, such as fish, we haven't come anywhere close to that kind of approach. And whether the wild creatures can survive the onslaught of our technology is a very, very big question. And the other big question that we haven't addressed, of course, is the damage that is being done to the ocean regime by a whole variety of pollutants that is changing the circumstances of the ecosystems that make possible the life-sustaining capacities of these systems.
This is certainly bigger than the 15 or 16 minutes we have allotted to it this morning, and I hope we can come back to those questions specifically, Les. But, Reg, I want to ask you now what you think can be done to preserve global stocks.
Well, I believe, as Les, that you have to do something about the fishing capacity, the fishing intensity that's hitting on these stocks. And it has to be done probably in a multinational way because, like the Grand Banks sticking out of Canada's protected 200 nautical mile waters, you have to have a large-scale reduction in fishing capacity across nations. You can lock up some of it into marine protected areas, but we don't believe that that in itself will do the job. You really have to address the subsidies, which allow companies to keep gearing up and keep going to sea further and further away from ports. You have to basically scale down the fishing intensity out there so that you don't have countries coming in from other places to grab it. And that's certainly the rationalization where I think things got out of hand here and will continue to be the reason why people won't want to make changes unless it happens on a larger scale across more nations at the same time.
And I think we ought to have better science than we have and a better capacity to appreciate what's happening in the ocean regime.
What do you mean by better science, Les?
Well, at least the capacity to do stock assessments in an appropriate way. We've limited our science in Canada, our DFO has, I should say, to trying to make itself capable of assessing the state of health of the individual stocks. It has badly succeeded in that limited objective. We haven't scratched the surface of trying to take an ecosystem approach to the operations that are going on within the system.
Reg, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Les. Are you at all optimistic that this can be reversed?
Well, I'm not as optimistic about the affairs of men or man in making these changes. I'm optimistic that we can recover some of the damage that's been done. And I do see signs, even amongst DFO, of they are starting to be involved in ecosystem approaches where they're not just looking at one stock and one species in isolation. So that's a start. We're starting to look at the way things are interconnected, and we're starting to look at them in a variety of new ways, such as the project I'm with. And I'm hopeful that some of these ideas will allow us to be able to prevent these kind of problems in the future and start working toward the solutions.
Les?
Yes, I'm not a total pessimist. I'm by nature optimistic, but all that I've seen indicates that it's going to be extremely difficult. You have to have a very strong political will to bring about conservation. We don't have that will at the moment. We have to have a real understanding and commitment to the importance of the oceans as a system that regulates our whole lives and that must be protected. And we don't have that understanding. The Canada Oceans Act and all that stems from it is really leaves a lot to be desired. So we have a long, long way to go. I agree that there are areas in which we have made some advances, but if you look at the latest, say, stock status reports put out by DFO for the East Coast, take about 20 significant commercial species of fish, and each single one you will find, almost without fail, the reference information insufficient. We simply do not know. We don't understand. The knowledge base is not there. We have no institutional memory. We are in a mess.
There's a lot of work to do.
An enormous amount.
I thank you both very much for talking to me this morning.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you, Sheila.
Dr. Reg Watson is a senior research fellow at the Fisheries Center of the University of British Columbia. He was in Vancouver. Dr. Les Harris is the author of the study that brought about the cod moratorium, and he was in our St. John's studio. Here now is Great Big Sea, the St. John's band, with Stumbling In from its new CD, Sea of No Cares.